Hi, and welcome to Nourish Your Biblical Roots. I'm Bishop Paul Lanier, Chairman of the Board of Directors for the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. We're broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas at NRB, the National Religious Broadcasters Convention. During our time together, we'll be talking with special guests on a variety of topics, especially as it relates to Israel and the work of this fellowship. Today, I'm really honored to welcome a dear friend to this podcast, a colleague, and he's someone that I've literally traveled into some of the most dangerous regions and areas of the Middle East. And he has a profound ministry in this International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, my friend Gadi Teichman Dan. Gadi is an Israeli immigrant who was born actually in Ukraine. And he and I just returned from Ukraine a few days ago. And he made Aliyah as a child to the Holy Land. For years, Gadi has worked faithfully with the fellowship, currently serving as Senior Director of Content in our Israel office. But it's through our time together in Ukraine over the past few years and the days after Russia invaded, and in recent days, visiting fellowship projects in the war-torn country, when I've really gotten to know Gadi and gotten to witness the love he has for the neediest of God's people. Gadi Teichman Dan, welcome to America, sir, and welcome to this time together. And I'm just thrilled, as I just noted a moment ago, you and I just returned from Ukraine, and God was so good to us. That was really a demanding trip. As the usual elements and things like that, but the travel, the beneficiaries, precious people who are struggling and hurting, and then spending time at an orphanage, precious children who are war orphans. And matter of fact, we were warned that the children probably wouldn't take to us or allow us into their little space very much because of all they'd seen and they'd heard, but God gave us favor, and we were able to walk in and hold them and love on them, and they were just so wonderful. So first of all, I just want to say welcome and thank you for who you are, even in my life, sir.
Thank you so much, Bishop. It's an honor to be here.
I remember, for me personally, I think it was March, maybe the war started, I believe it was February 24th of 22, and Yael had been there like a week before, standing on the corner trying to warn the world that war was coming. And unbelievably, a lot of people didn't believe her, and until it did start. And I remember it was March the 1st that she reached out to me and said, is there any way you can get there? And so I said, absolutely. And I'll never forget, Gadi, my first trip there was getting out of the vehicle and seeing, I don't know how many hundreds of automobiles lined up on the side of the road with young mothers taking the hand of young children and leading them and guiding. No men, all of the men were back in war, back in Ukraine, and we had stepped into Moldova. And so to see that, it was a radical, it was something I had never seen before.
Bishop, I couldn't agree more. I think the scenes that we saw in the first days of war were scenes that we before saw only in movies about,
yes,
World War II. I remember, I can see it in front of my eyes right now, because I arrived to the border with Ukraine 3 days after the war.
Wow.
On February 27th. It was a very long journey just to get to,
yes,
the border, because everything was closed and people were fleeing from Ukraine, and we actually from the fellowship wanted to be there,
mm-hmm,
on the ground,
mm-hmm,
helping the people who tried to escape, the refugees. So arriving to the border, I remember driving in the car and there is nothing around us. It was, everything was covered with snow.
Wow.
And approximately 2 miles from the border, before we reached the border, I began seeing people just walking. People just walking and with desperate look in their eyes.
Blank.
And we continued driving. That's it, 2 miles, mm-hmm. like 5 minutes, and all of this way people kept walking.
They
were fleeing from Ukraine. Arriving to the border, we were one of the first organizations to be there to greet the people who managed to escape. And they were walking with nothing.
Nothing.
Because what can you take from your home when the war suddenly breaks at 6 a.m. in the morning and you're under attack? And you hear the news that the Russian army is invading Ukraine and getting closer to your home. You just grab the smallest things that you can, your passport, and get into the car and drive as far as possible. And this is what we're witnessing.
Can I ask you, because I want to talk some more about that first week for me there, but as someone born in Ukraine, I can't imagine personally what it was like. You're familiar with the terrain or the conversation, the language, the people, the culture. What was it like for you to walk into that space representing the fellowship and yet at the same time knowing that's your DNA?
It felt very personal. It felt very personal because I was born in Ukraine. Actually, I was born in the Soviet Union before Ukraine was received independence. And my parents were Zionists, and they wanted to make Aliyah for such a long time, but because of the Iron Curtain, they couldn't. So in the late 80s, when things began to change in the Soviet Union, and the opportunity, and it became an opportunity to make Aliyah to Israel, they were one of the first ones to apply for Aliyah. And we arrived to Israel in 1990, before the Soviet Union fell apart, before Ukraine was even Ukraine, because this was our homeland. My parents believed that all Jews had to be in Israel, and they didn't wait an extra second to make this move. And they made this move a month before the Gulf War. They didn't care about this before the Iraq attacked Israel. They wanted to be here for the better future of for the kids. So when I came to Ukraine, when the war broke, I felt personal because, you know, we were running away basically from the same regime that attacked Ukraine. And now I see people again running with nothing, and the only thing, and I felt that this is our duty now to help them. And with the means of the fellowship, being on the ground, preparing for this. As you mentioned, Yael was in Ukraine just a few days before the war broke. And I was also in Ukraine 3 weeks before the war broke. And everybody who we speak with, they say, nothing is going to happen. Why are you asking this question? Why do you want to do anything and say, make us nervous about the war? But there was a vision. We understood what may happen. We were ready for this.
Yes.
And this is why.
And had been there for 30 years.
Exactly. And this is why we also were the first one to help the people who ran away from Ukraine.
You know, when I arrived, all of a sudden it started snowing. I mean, the sky had just been so blue and it started snowing. And we were standing there at this train track. And you could hear the police blowing whistles. You could hear the dogs, the children screaming. As I noted, there were no men because they were, except old men, because everyone was back in Ukraine warring. And I remember standing there thinking, if I could take this scene and turn it into black and white, you would just declare it was in the late 1930s, early 40s. It had that feeling, and I was just completely. And our first task, I remember that day, was to try our best to get these young mothers and children out of the snow, get them on some buses, get them to a place of housing. And one of the first things we did was find like 12 or 13 indoor tennis courts and covered like a space we're sitting in right now, covering the floors with just mattresses so that from wall to wall, these young mothers, small children, were able to at least be safe for the night and rest. You remember those mattress cities there?
I remember this as it was yesterday.
Yeah. Yes.
It was amazing because the people, they didn't know where to go. Mm-hmm. And we were there to help them, bring them to the capital, to Chisinau, and already have everything in place, the mattresses, mm-hmm. those tennis fields. It was organized, so, and the food, hot soup
yes.
to give them in this cold winter. They were sitting there on those mattresses. They received medical help. Mm. They received food. And they also knew that we are going to be there to help them
yes.
to later make Aliyah to Israel.
Wow. And you know, and remember, the next day I went, and another organization had, there was a woman in that organization who owned a large house or a camp. It's like five stories. And so many of the refugees were living there. It had been a camp. I hate that word, but it had been a camp of some kind. And people could come and eat. And I sat down and ate with the people. Obviously, it was great food. The people were so hospitable to us. And then would watch these Holocaust survivors in their 80s having to walk up five flights of steps to get to a little place to lie down and rest. And then the next day, we were in the municipal building. Israel had been able to streamline the process so that they didn't have to go through the whole ritual of trying to move from a Ukrainian citizen to an Israeli. And they streamlined the process. And so we were in that building that whole day, just trying to get it ready for the... And then the next day, we were at the airport. Gadi, I will never forget the look, the sound, or lack thereof, of going to that airport in Moldova. There were no persons standing in line, no customers, no passengers for other flights. The airport was entirely closed, except the fellowship had been able to secure permission. And to watch the buses come up of our Olim that were just there for the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews, and to walk in an airport and to still hear the music playing through the sound system and all of these little trinket things going around in circles, and you wouldn't know a war was going on, but the only people in the whole building were Olim getting ready to get on the plane, and one woman I remember had only a pocketbook. That was all she was taking with us. And then finally we got on that plane. And what was fascinating, and you know this, you helped organize this, was to get on the plane and to fly to Tel Aviv. And as we were getting the Olim, the Jews, off the plane, our people were already packing it full of supplies to go back to Moldova, so that when it would land and more Jews would get on the plane, they would be unloading. It was the most synchronized, sophisticated operation. And that's what you do all the time. But that was a powerful scene to watch.
It was amazing. More than 95 tons of humanitarian aid was sent on those planes back. 95 tons.
What? Tons?
Yeah.
Wow.
Was sent on those planes back to Moldova.
Going Ukraine, back and forth.
Going back and forth.
Bringing
Olim on one. Yes.
That's amazing.
And you mentioned Holocaust survivors. We helped so many Holocaust survivors in those days who escaped from the war.
Mm.
The sentence that I remember hearing time after time is, I lived through the Holocaust when I was a child, through war when I was a child. And back then, the Russians were helping me.
Yeah.
And now when I'm old and helpless again,
yes.
I'm living through war again, and I'm running away from the people who helped me before.
Wow.
And the woman that you mentioned, mm-hmm. This Holocaust survivor, the book, I remember her. Her name is Riva, and she never traveled before. She was living in one of the small villages in Kyiv area. She has a has a nephew in Israel, but she didn't think about making Aliyah because she was too old. She was 96 years
old.
Wow. So when the war began, she managed to board the bus and arrive to the border where we met her and gave her housing until she got all the documents for Aliyah. Now, I remember her holding the small bag with a book. And I came to her and asked her, how come this is all that you took? How did you decide what you take? Why did you take this book? And she told me this book is a book of a very famous Ukrainian author, Yevtushenko, who wrote a poem about Babi Yar. Babi Yar is a place of a massacre in World War II where 300,000 Jews were massacred by the Nazis. She was a child back then, and she was saved. She was lying under corpses.
Wow.
Above her, she wasn't shot. She escaped. So when this Yevtushenko wrote this poem, she managed to meet him in person, and he signed the book. And this is her most precious item that she, as a Holocaust survivor, took from her house and brought to Israel.
From a different massacre.
Yes.
Wow. Tell me right now, all that you've seen, Ukraine, down south because of all that's happened in Gaza, up north, you and I traveled together throughout both of those regions. I'll never forget I think it was a Saturday night, we were getting ready to do some work on Sunday morning, and we got word, I think maybe it was a dozen children had been killed on a soccer field. And you have seen this violence at its absolute worst, but you've also seen the fellowship at its best. What do you think is our greatest strength as the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews? What do we do best?
We're doing good and giving hope. And we do this because we are on the ground. We can reach the people who are in need. And we both witnessed this in person because with your traveling and my work, when I visit, so every day, almost every day, I visit our fellowship projects and meet the people who receive this help. And the significance yes. of this help is tremendous. Whether it's in Ukraine, where we're operating for so many years and continue giving this help, bringing food box with in times of war to an elderly Holocaust survivor living in a distant village who has no family, this is what keeps her alive. Helping people in Israel, displaced people in Israel, people who had to evacuate from their homes. By the way, this is something that we couldn't imagine that can happen, but we were ready for this. With the soup kitchen providing food,
yes.
providing basic needs.
Wow.
To let them know that they are not alone.
Yes.
And help them to survive.
Yes.
This is what we do best.
And know that they can
yes.
survive. You know, I remember when we were in Ukraine in the first trip, a Holocaust survivor. It's amazing the mind games that you have to play to survive. And she looked at me and said, and I never will forget it. I mean, all she had seen, she had to leave part of her family back to get out of Ukraine. All that she had suffered, the destruction, the death, the threats. And she looked at me and she said, I forgot to unplug the refrigerator. Now, at first, when you hear that, you want to just almost chuckle and say, oh, don't worry about the refrigerator. But she had to go back to a place in her mind where she had at least some semblance of control. I can unplug the refrigerator. I can plug the refrigerator in. I can turn it on. I can have electricity. Instead of you have taken, stripped from me everything that would empower me, that would make me a capable And so there are so many people now in Israel who have been, in the past since October 7th, who have had their jobs taken, their school taken, don't know where their family is. And the fellowship has been so great with hostage families and providing money, cards for 300 of those families, providing, as the fellowship has done, the Aliyah, you know, since we were founded, we have helped to bring 770,000 Jews home to Israel. That's amazing. But to be able to make it all work in your mind, to wake up in the morning and to hear, you know, it's one thing for me to go over there for a week and to hear the sirens, and even we were very close to some rockets at one point. I think 100 feet is what they said, and we felt it. But I don't live there. You do. What is it like to wake up every morning, possibly hearing the siren, knowing the threats that can be so imminent, knowing that the violence that surrounds you day in and day night and night? Gadi, how is it? How do you do that? How do you make that work? Do you have to go on a place and say, I forgot to unplug the refrigerator? How do you make to keep it sane, surrounded by such insanity?
Bishop, we have such an important mission. I don't think about danger. You know, when the war broke in Ukraine and I was traveling there immediately, I didn't think about danger. The same thing, because the mission is so important.
Yes.
We understand that there are so many people in need, and we are able to help them. We must help them.
Yes.
And this is what we do in the fellowship. The same thing in October, after October 7th. Israel was, is still, it's an open wound for everybody, October 7th. But we have to act. This is our turn to act
right now. Yes, sir.
And doing this...
Well, did you just say it's our turn?
Yes.
That's an interesting phrase, that understanding that every generation has its turn to step up and to step into it. That's an extraordinary responsibility, to grow up in a land and know my turn is coming up.
You know, I think that what we learned from October 7th, that yes, we didn't think that this can happen, but it happened.
Yeah.
And now this is my generation turn,
wow,
our generation turn, to make it better and work. And this is what keeps the drive.
Wow.
Continue doing this.
Wow.
You don't think about danger. You think about there are people in need. And we traveled together to the northern border.
Yes.
Before the ceasefire with Lebanon, we were less than a mile from the border.
Yes.
Under attack.
Yes,
a rocket fell, you remember, Bishop, just next to you. But the mission is so important.
Yes,
we
sir.
Have to be there.
Gadi, I love you. I'm telling you, I love you. I'm so grateful for you. I want to pray before we leave our people. Almighty God, I thank you for Gadi. I thank you for your hand upon his life, how strategic he is to what you're doing in the midst of ruins. I thank you that you keep him safe and that you keep him well, along with all of our people in the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. Continue to place us in those spaces where you receive the glory and your people receive the blessing. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you so much for tuning in.